ציבו, אז אוי פריו, אגן ציבו, אז אוי פרטו, ויהידי שממה יחגיג ולשופית. אלס ומאנקי אינדב, ידה מניף וזינדב, מתניין פלוג ונשי. Ja hitrajer pastech zizane shu Ich geb bavek man broiti noch man shu Der kenden bashraben den größten Konje Nor mit ziade di schmaje fi der roje Jetzt geh ich zinne lechtele mit groje jiz gewanje jiz Ich treu zin mit zitteren Hoje An mein Sitzen wuss nor am Ames Harz Ken du's verschreien Geknitt in Gebinden zu dir größer Beure Zwei lechterlich bei dir, bei Schäfer im Zinn In noch ein lechterlich für jeden einzigen Kind Heilige bei Schäfer, ich bin mit heißen Tränen Kann ein lechterlich so nicht ausgelöschen werden Ach ja, gedenke shayim mit dis mul khaim ui ba shefer ich beit khit jeder so lab in ane khayim auf na mulig weg sich halten man et vil is allein nis bauen was ei sehne in ein luche dir sai u man ki ba shefer ba shefer
Good evening.
Parsha this week is Parshas Vayera. And there's an interesting Haftorah. Haftorah is the portion of the Navi that we read at the conclusion of the Parsha, after we read the Torah portion. So we read a little bit from the prophets that has some kind of relationship to the Parsha. So in the story of the Navi, this Navi that we read now, this week's Parsha, has two stories. Two very insightful and interesting stories. Both of them are about Elisha. Elisha was the disciple of Eliyahu HaNavi. And when Eliyahu HaNavi ascended, went up to heaven, Elisha became the prophet of the generation. So the Torah speaks about, the Navi tells us of the incredible miracles that Elisha performed. And it tells two stories. We'll begin with the second story first. The pasuk that the Torah says that Elisha would come to the city, he would stay in the home of a certain woman. And she was so kind and hospitable to him, so he asked her if she needs anything. She said she doesn't. But then she told him that she doesn't have any children. So Elisha blessed her with a child. And when the child was 2 years old, the child passed away. So she went running after Elisha, and she cried out to him, and Elisha responded, and in the end he resurrected this child. That's the second story. Great Nes, Tchias HaMeis, some of the greatest miracles. The connection of that story to Parshas Vayera is very clear. In Parshas Vayera, the highlight of the Parsha is the the birth of Yitzchak. So you have a barren woman. Sarah was an Akara. She had a child. So in the Haftorah, we also have a woman couldn't have any children, who later gave birth to a child. Also, we have that that very child in the Parsha's life was threatened. Now, Kedas Yitzchak, Yitzchak was binded and almost taken his life away from him. And according to some Midrashim, Yitzchak literally passed away out of fear, soul departed. And then his neshama came back to him. So that again is similar to the story of the Haftarah where this baby passed away and then was resurrected. The first story, however, is about a woman whose husband died, and she's a poor woman. So she has creditors who are coming after her and are demanding that she pay up the debt that her husband owed. And Elisha performed the miracle. He got a little bit of oil, and he managed to increase that oil, and then she sold it for a large profit. A great name. But the question is, what's the connection of that to this week's parasha? How does that come into the parasha, Parshas Vayera? And the Torah definitely could have the Chachamim, when they instituted the Navi, the portion, could have just selected the second story. Didn't have to put the first story. Sometimes you have a portion that is relevant, but it's too short. There's a certain amount of psukim. That is the minimal requirement. So you have to add some more. But over here, the second story is 21 psukim. It's enough psukim for the Navi. And nevertheless, we add the first story, which seems not to have any relevance to this week's parsha. So to understand that, we need to take a little bit of a deeper glimpse and a deeper understanding in what is the inner meaning of a story. So let's first look at the story just from, we gave out copies. So we'll just read the story just in a simple way and then read it over again. So it sounds like this. You have it on page 370, those who have the copies. It says like this, V'isha achas, and there was this one woman, Menashe b'nei Anavim, from the wives of the student prophets. So the commentaries tell us that this woman was the wife of Avadya. Avadya was a ger, a convert, and a great tzaddik, a navi, a student navi. Student Navim meant the amateur Navim, those who were going in the ways of prophecy, seeking prophecy. They lived a very high, sublime, spiritual lifestyle. And she was the wife of one of these prophets, of Avadya. And so she came crying, Tzakal Elisha. She came crying to Elisha the prophet. Lamer saying, Avdocha Ishi Meis. Your servant, my husband, died. And Rashi explains from the Medrash that Avadya was the one who, during the terrible, horrific persecutions that Achav, the wicked king Achav, persecuted the prophets, and they had to go into hiding, Avadya was the one who was supporting them. And that's why he fell into a huge debt. As it says, Va'ata yadaitu, you know, ki avdecha yareyas Hashem, that your servant, my husband, feared Hashem. But she said, Vahanoisha, and the creditor, the creditor is coming to take my two children for him, for slaves, for servants. Again, he borrowed money from the son of Achav, Yehoram. And he borrowed with interest, and he couldn't pay it back, and now he died. So the almana, the widow, was left with this huge debt, and she couldn't pay it back. So when the guy came to collect, when he sent to collect the debt, and she said she doesn't have, he threatened to take away her children. That was the only thing she had. And as slaves. Vayomer aleha Elisha. So Elisha said to this woman, so she's screaming, Gevald, save my children. So Elisha says to her, Moi esalach, what can I do for you? Hagidili, tell me ma yeshlach babayis. Tell me if you have anything in your house. This story that we read over here is a Shulchan Aruch for miracles. It's like the code of law for miracles for Nisim. Because it says very interesting and important rules about a miracle. The first thing he said to her is, tell me what you have. If I'm going to perform a miracle, I don't want to do something yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. We want to do something from something. So, if you have something, we have something to work with. Do you have anything in your house? So she says, V'toyma, she says, Ein l'shevchascha kol babayis. Your maidservant doesn't have anything in the house. I don't have anything. Ki yamasuch shemen. Just a little jug of oil. A little course of oil. V'yoymer. So he says, good, terrific. At least you have something. You have a little bit of oil, fine. V'yoymer, and he says to her, L'chi shali loch kelim en achutz. Go out and borrow vessels. Barrels from the outside. It's kol shchenayich from all your neighbors. Kelim reikim, empty barrels. Al tamiti, don't decrease. Get as many as you can. Fill your house with barrels. Ubasain kam, the sagarta adelis, and you lock the door. Ba'adeichu ba'advanech, in front of, meaning lock the door and don't let anybody else in, but for yourself and your children to be on the inside. And pour on all these vessels. And the full ones, you should move away. Once the vessel is full, move it away and bring in another vessel under the pouring jug. So here we have two very important insights into the workings of a miracle. The first thing is, he says to her, lock the door. A miracle requires privacy. It's nice. The miracle is going to happen. It's helpful. That's conducive for a miracle. That it shouldn't be visible. Because generally, Hashem doesn't like to interfere with nature. Hashem created the world, and the world works in a certain natural way, which gives an appearance as if the world just works by the laws of nature, unrelated to Hashem. When Hashem does a miracle, then He's parting the veil and He's appearing. There's Gilui Elokus, there's a revelation of Hashem. And Hashem doesn't want that because He wants we should reveal Him, we should find Him. He doesn't want to be the one who reveals Himself. The process of the creation is a process of hide and seek. He has hidden and He wants us to search for Him and find Him. So that's why even for whatever reason a miracle needs to happen, it is far more possible for it to occur if it's not out in the open, if it's hidden. It's a good thing to know. If you go somewhere and you get a bracha from a tzaddik or something, and you really feel that there's a powerful blessing or a promise, we're supposed to keep our mouths shut and not talk about it. Because if we speak about it, that itself can ruin it. So he tells her, close the door. Then he said, another thing is, v'hamole tasi'i. As you're going to pour the oil into the things, do not move the jug. Keep the jug in its place. Move the barrels away. But keep the jug in one place. And Rashi tells us, and the other Mepharshim commentary say, that you have a miracle going. You capture that miraculous energy. It has manifested itself in a certain place. Don't stop it. Don't move. Keep it flowing the whole time. And keep it in one place. Because that's where the miracle took place. Hold it in that position. Move the other barrels, but don't move the jug. And he says, "Batelach meitoy." So she went. "Batizgar adelas bado." She closes the door. "Ubad banel" before her children. "Hem magisha malel." They were bringing the barrels. "He moitzekes," and she was pouring. "Vayhi kimaloi sakelen." And it was as she filled up all the barrels. V'taymer el benasa, she said to her son, "Hagisha lai oit keli, bring me another vessel." V'yomer alau ein oit keli, he said to her, "I don't have any more." V'yamed hashamim, and the oil stopped. So here it says, "Vayikim alois hakelim." It was when the vessels, when the barrels were filled. Simply, it means when the barrels were filled. The barrels were filled with the oil. But as the Rashi or the other Mefarshim, the Radak and others bring that. That has another meaning. Not only that the barrels were filled, but there was another miracle that happened. She filled. She completed all the barrels. But then there was some shards or broken barrels that perhaps broke then or at another time. So she right away told the children to pick up the pieces, the broken pieces. She had such a munah, such faith in the tzaddik, in the navi, and what he told her. So she said, just pick up the pieces. So as he picked up the shards, they formulated. They came together as vessels. And that's the meaning of Yikim Eloi Sakelim. Vayikim Eloi Sakelim. And it was when the Kalim, not filled with oil, but when the vessels were perfected. And again, that's another very powerful lesson. Is we all know that in order for a bracha to come, there has to be a vessel. You need to be a Kalim. So a lot of times we daven, and we daven strong, and or we get a bracha from someone, from a tzaddik, and sure, you got the bracha, you should be happy. But then the Yetzer Hara comes in and throws in doubt. Not the doubt chas v'shalom. You're not going to doubt the tzaddik. The tzaddik is a tzaddik, and tzaddik goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. You're not going to doubt God's abilities, but he's going to throw in that doubt and say, but you're not perfect. And you're not a vessel. You're not a king. You're not a vessel for that miracle. And that's why the miracle won't come. So there's a pasuk that says, V'hu yachal kalecha. And he will support you, he will feed you, he will... one of the chassidish ha'taych on the word V'hu yachal kalecha is that Hashem not only will he give you the blessing, but V'hu yachal kalecha, he's going to help you get the keli. Get the vessel too. So in our case, they ran out of the vessels. But because she had such a munah in the miracle, then Hashem put together the broken shards and made other vessels. So we have a munah, powerful munah in our davening, in the bracha of a tzaddik, then we shouldn't think that, because true, we're not perfect and we really are undeserving. But Hashem will give us the keli too, as you see from here. But then, when did it stop? And maybe this could have gone on and on and on, even if she didn't have anything. Because the miracle was coming with all its intensity, with all its power. But she said to her son, give me another one, and he said, there isn't any. It was a little weakness. And once he said, there isn't any, he went, Vayam Hashem. So they all stopped. Vayam Hashem also means, besides that the oil stopped flowing, Vayam Hashem also means that the oil stood up. As Rashi explains, it means that the price of oil surged. And it went up. So not only did she have a lot of oil, but she had something of great value. Maybe it's something we shouldn't talk about so much now. The one thing that's going good is... Vatava and she came. Vataged le'isha likim. So she came to the godly man. And to ask him, she told him about the miracle. Basically, she asked him if she should sell already or she should wait. Also a relevant question. When do you sell? When do you buy? When? So, Vayomer, and he said to her, L'chim michias Hashem, go sell it. Shalmi es nishyech, and you'll pay up your credit, your debts, and your creditors. V'atu banayich techi banoysa. And you and your children... will live off the remainder. Meaning you'll have so much profit, so much money, so to pay back your creditors, and you'll even have extra. You'll even have extra for you to support you and your family for the rest of your life. And as it says, you will live until, meaning you'll have money for you and your family until Tchiyas HaNesim, until the resurrection of the dead. That family remained a wealthy family throughout all the generations. Don't know who they are. Not me. But this says, you and your children will live, and this was from this miracle, ongoing, forever. So this is a story. We know that every story in the Torah has its literal meaning. And then there's the body of the Torah, there's the soul. It's mentioned 2 weeks ago. And the Ramban writes, HaTorah meramezes medaberes betachtoinim u'meramezes be'alyoinim. The Torah speaks down here below about our physical world and events that took place down here. Meramezes, but it's indicating in the supernal worlds, in the higher worlds. It's also symbolic for things that happen in the higher realm. The Shloah HaKadosh brings from, don't remember, maybe the Ramam Apanoi, or one of the great, who says the opposite. Torah is not speaking in the physical world, indicating and symbolizing, hinting to the higher spheres. The opposite is true. The Torah is speaking in the upper worlds. And it's indicating and symbolizing to our world. So definitely, for sure, there's no doubt about it, this story took place in the literal sense, like all the other stories in the Torah. However, the primary story and the primary event is really in the spiritual dynamics. And some glimmer of it, some shadow of it, also manifests itself in our world. So here is the story as the Shneir Zalman of Liadi, the Baal HaTanya, interprets this story. The Isha Achas and this one woman. The woman is referring to the neshama, to the soul, because the soul is feminine. The Zohar calls the neshama Bas Koyein, the daughter of the Koyein. The wife, all of Shir HaShirim, is all about the Jewish people being the bride, the wife of Hashem. Simply it's because man is called Mashpia, and the woman is called Mekabel, recipient. Oyer and Keli, light and vessel. Hashem is the source, the transmitter, and we are the recipients of His light. And that's why we're called the Isha, the woman. Isha Achas. The one woman means a woman of oneness. What do we mean, the woman of oneness? The soul is the recipient of oneness. She perceives the oneness in creation. She perceives the unity in all of existence. Meaning to say that Hashem created a world with variations, with billions of endless creatures, beings. So as we look at the world, it's a fragmented world. So many things. It's a reshus harabim, it's a public domain. People, ideas, things, countries, everything that there is. It's a lot. A big world. But we know that that's not true. In truth, Atahu koydim shenivra oylam, atahu shlacha shenivra oylam. You are the only one before the world was created, and you are the same after the world was created. Which means that creation did not challenge and did not take away from God's exclusivity. Just like Hashem was the one and only before the world was created, so too He is the only reality after the world was created. And that's the deeper meaning of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Not only that God is the only God, but that God is the only reality. There's nothing else but Him. However, from our physical eyes, we don't see that. We notice ourselves as very important entities and beings, and we notice all the things around us. But the neshama, the soul, perceives that truth. How? What does it mean that Hashem is the only one? Because He is the reality of creation. He imbues creation every moment with its existence, so the existence of everything we see is really only an expression of Him. The neshama is the recipient of that truth. She sees and experiences all other creations live in the world of the many. The neshama, before it comes into the body, she's the isha, she's the recipient of that truth. She knows that truth. That ein oid melvadei, there's none but you. So she's called isha, she's the recipient, achas, of that oneness. That's why we always say, Shema Yisrael, hear Jew. We're calling to our soul and we're saying, Shema Yisrael, you Yisrael, in me, listen and hear and understand, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, because you know this. Now she is, this woman, Meneshei B'nei Anavim. She is the wife of the student prophets. What is the deeper meaning of this? Neshay, we said again, means the recipient. Nevi'im comes from the word, means prophet, but the reason why a prophet is called Navi, it comes from the word Nivsasayim. Niv means the utterance of the lips. The main thing of a Navi is the words that which he's that he says, that he's prophesying. Meaning in the Navi, the primary thing about the Navi is not his wisdom, it's not his personal talents. The main thing about the Navi is that he is the one who gives us over the word of Hashem. And the less he mixes in his own ideas and his own interpretations, the better he is. He is supposed to be a mouthpiece, like Hashem's microphone, in this world. That's the Navi. So he's a man of speech. So when we're saying over here, Nishay B'nei Anaviyah, what does it mean? It means that the Nisham is the recipient of divine speech. Navi, referring to the attribute of speech. What does that mean? We know that all transmissions, all illumination, all godly influence that comes into creation, comes into the world, comes through, Kabbalistically, a concept called the attribute of Malchus, which is called Malchus Peh, the mouth of Hashem. Just in simple words, when Hashem created the world, what does the pasuk say? Vayomer Hashem, and Hashem spoke. And he said, let there be light, let there be this, let there be that. Asarim amaris nivra oilam. Why are we using the idea of speech? Hashem is not a person, doesn't have a body. The idea of speech is communication. Like in a person. There is thoughts, and there are feelings, and there is intellectual process, and there is pleasure, and there is desire. But all those experiences take place inside the person, within. The place, where does the person exit himself, or how does a person exit and reach out beyond himself? That's through speech. So therefore, when Hashem is transmitting to create a so-called world that's outside of him, or at least perceives itself to be outside of him, so how does he do that? Through speaking the world, transmitting word. But that's not only when Hashem is creating. It's even after creation. When Hashem wants to introduce new light into the creation, a miracle, or new inspiration, or whatever it is, it all comes through Hashem's the attribute of Malchus, which is the last and final attribute, which is Hashem, which is divine speech. So the Neshama hears Hashem's words, he hears Hashem speaking, like a Navi. But the Neshama is a recipient of it in Gan Eden. Down here below, Hashem is constantly calling out to us too. Every day there is a basco. There's a heavenly voice. And the basco calls out and says many things. It says, return my wayward children. Shuvu banim shevavim. It says various things in Pirkei Avos. Every day there's a basco that comes out. Woe to those who shame the Torah, whatever. All kinds of basco. But we can walk around the oblivious. We're lacking the antenna to hear it. The Baal Shem Tov says we do hear it to some degree. But generally, we don't notice it because we're not receiving it. The neshama is a recipient of those baskos, of those announcements, of those revelations when it is in Gan Eden. And that is why she's called Nishay. She is the recipient of Nevi'im, of Nivsvasayim, of divine speech, of Hashem's illumination into creation. The neshama is perceiving deeper and deeper and deeper endlessly of the great infinite light. Now this neshama comes down in the body. And when she's here in the body, Tzaka al Elisha. She cries out to Elisha. Who is Elisha? Elisha is Hashem. Why doesn't it say Tzaka al Hashem? Why does it say Tzaka al Elisha? She cried out to Elisha. Because the word Elisha is broken into two words. Kelisha. The God who responds. Shah comes from the word Vayisha Hashem. That Hashem has responded to Kayin. To Hevel, and he didn't return to, it says in the parts of Bereshis, he turned to Hevel and to his Mincha, and not to Kayin. So Kelisha, the God who turned, the God who responds. The reason the Neshama cries out to Hashem is because the soul knows that Kelisha, the Neshama feels intimate and personal with God. Keli is my God, and he's a God that answers. Even when we live and in a horrific Hester Ponim, in concealment of the divine countenance. Even if we don't see, even if we don't feel, then the Neshama knows in its inner core that Keli Shah, this is the God that answers. And that's why the soul cries out. And what does our Neshama, what does our soul, when it has a moment to speak to God, what does it say? It says, Avdecha Ishi Meis. Your servant, my husband, died. What does it mean? Ishi comes from the word Ish. Ish Shali, my husband, right? But Ish, the word Ish, the etymology of the word Ish is Eish Yud. Eish Yud. My fire, Eish is fire. Eish Yud, my fire to the Yud. What does it mean, my fire to the Yud? Hashem has many different names. Kael, Elokim, Shakai, all the other names that there are. What is a name? A name is a projection. A name is a manner in which you show yourself to others. When a person is sitting alone and is, if you're living alone on an island without, not involved with other people, not interacting with anybody, you don't need a name. A name is for others to know you. So Hashem, when he created, in order to relate to the creations, projects names. And why different names? Because different kinds of projections, depending on how he's relating. When he's relating as a judge, he's Elokim. When he's judging as a compassionate father, he's this name. Kael is Chesed, and so forth. The various different names that there are represent different kinds of manifestations. Every manifestation means that there is some kind, since it's a communication, so there is a adaptation. There's a concealment, there's a constriction, there's a limitation that confines and limits the light so that the creation can receive it. Every name. Some names are more constricting, some names are less constricting, but every name. But then there is a more deeper name, just like within a person, in a human being. There are the names, your professional name. You're called doctor, and you're called teacher by your students. It's a more external name. Then there is your personal name. That the name that, you know, those who know you personally call you that name. Then you are your nickname, or your very, very personal name, and only close friends will call you by that name. Very intimate name. Or your family, very close to you, calls you by that name. So you have various different degrees of names. Hashem has many names, but the personal, most personal name is Yudke Vavke, the highest name, the Shema Etzem. What does it mean, the most personal name? It's the name where Hashem is shrouding and concealing and veiling himself the least. He is the way, he's shining, he's projecting as he is. That's why he utterly transcends space, time and space. Haya haive v'yye ke'echa. Past, present, and future are one. It's completely on a godly scale. There's no adaptation. That's the shame, Yudke Vavke. However, it's still a name. So if it's still a name, there is still some degree of adaptation. Now, the way the light progresses is Yudke Vavke. The latter letters is more contraction, more veiling. The earlier the letter appears, the higher the letter is. So if we have Yudke Vavke, the hey is the most contracted, the last hey. The vav is more expansive light. The hay is even more, a higher level of revelation. And the yud is the highest. Now, since the yud is the most personal name of Yud Kei Vav Kei is the most personal name, and the yud is the very, very beginning of that revelation, so the yud represents the beginning of the first projection of Hashem, which means the light is in its full intensity, its full light. That is why it's also a yud. A yud is a decimal point. Meaning it doesn't have any shape, any form, it doesn't have any description. Because we can't grasp it, know it, it's just simple, beyond all definition, just yud. Just a dot. A dot meaning that we know it's there, but we can't have any description or anything about it. Because it's higher than any character, higher than any personality, to that light, to that. Eish yud is the fire of the soul towards the yud. Meaning that when our neshama is sarganeidin, our neshama is yearning, longing, with an unquenchable thirst and desire to be reabsorbed in the infinite light where it comes from. Soul comes from the infinite light. The neshama searches and longs to get back, to unite, because the neshama feels stuck in being a soul. Because even as a soul, it has a certain identity, it has parameters and limitations. And the neshama knows how distant and removed it is from the infinite pure light. So it yearns to go back to the yud, eish. And it climbs and climbs and climbs with an unrelenting power and zeal to connect to that yud. That's when the neshama is in heaven. But the neshama cries out to God and it says, Talisha, the Isha cries out to Elisha and she says, Avdacha Ishi Meis, my Eish, you died. I don't feel that anymore. That's not the passion of my life. It's not the thirst of my soul. I don't feel anything. I don't have that fire. I'm not yearning to cleave to your infinite light. I'm not yearning to bond with you. My soul, my fire has expired. Va'ata yodaita, and you know, ki avdecha yada yas Hashem. You know that before I came down into this world, when I was in Gan Eden, I did fear you. I did serve you with love and fear and awe. But the soul bitterly weeps and says, to make matters worse, va'anoyshe bolo kachas, eshnei yolodai loy lavanim. The creditor is coming to take my two children, lavadim, as slaves. The creditor, noisha, comes from the word, the one who makes me forget. Menashe was called Menashe because Yosef said, Hashem has given me so much blessing, He has made me forget all my suffering that I've had. That's called Kinashani Elikim, that's called Amali. Hashem made me forget all my suffering. Vahanoisha. And the one who makes me forget, that's my animal consciousness. Our animalistic drives, our animalistic consciousness, our animal soul, the Yetzirah and so forth. So that's why it's called the one who makes me forget. Because that's the primary thing that the earthy consciousness does, is it makes all heavenly consciousness, all spiritual awareness be forgotten from the soul. But more than that, Vahanoisha and the creditor Bala Kachas has come to take Eshnei Yelodai Loi Lavadim. He's came to take my two children for him as slaves. What does that mean? The emotions are called children. There is intellect and there is emotions. The emotions are called children because they're the offspring of the intellect. Simple words, when a person understands and appreciates something intellectually, so then that creates an attraction, a desire to have that thing. Like, little children don't desire money. Little kids, when they're very small. Why? Because they don't have an appreciation for the value of money. You just want a candy. But as they go older and they mature and they understand what money is, the power of money, what it can give them, so then they begin to desire money and so forth. So as you get older, or as your mind changes and you appreciate different things, that creates, molds and crafts the emotions. And it creates the emotions. And that's why the emotions are called Yeladai, children. Now we have really seven primary emotions. But from the primary emotions itself, there is two prime emotions. Two main emotions. The two main emotions are love and fear. Or sometimes called Chesed and Gevura. Why are they the two primary emotions? Because what is an emotion? An emotion is the way you feel towards something outside of you. It's your relationship towards a thing. So, your relationship to something can either you're drawn to it, which is attraction, that's chesed, an attraction, or recoiling or retraction. You're pulling back from something. So if you become familiar with something and the thing is good and desirable, so that creates an attraction. So then you want it. And to the degree of how good it is and how much you appreciate it, to that intense is going to be that attraction. To the degree that, but then sometimes you get to know something, and the thing is causes you to recoil, to be intimidated by it, or to be repulsed by it. So you pull back, you restrain. So that's gevura. So you have chesed and you have gevura, the right and the left. These are the two, and the other ones is all the other emotions are various different blends of this feeling, either opening up to it something or closing. And retreating into yourself. So these are the two emotions. So we're saying like this. V'anoisha, our animal soul, our animal consciousness, who one who makes me forget. Not only has he wiped my soul, has he wiped the fire or extinguished the fire in my Nisham, but much worse than that. He's taking my two children, which means my love of God, and my fear, my emotions, and he's kidnapping them. And he's stealing them, and he's directing them towards the animal drives towards its, the animalistic pursuits of our animals. And what does that mean? We find something really strange about Jews. The Jews, when they go after something, when they get involved in something, they get involved in that thing with such intensity, with passion, with a fervor and a zeal that others don't have. Everybody knows the way Jews do business. No one does business like Yidden do business. Oh, Jews do if they get involved in politics, they're whatever it is. There is a certain intensity that usually borders on insanity on the way Jews get into things. And why is that? We spoke about last week and other times. The Jews' neshama is higher than there is a soul of the regular, ordinary human soul, and then there is a higher neshama, a Jewish soul. And the Jewish neshama is a chelik l'kama mal mamish. It's literally a piece of God from above. Therefore, it's infinite, and all its powers are infinite. So therefore, its passions have an infinite dimension to it, an infinite intensity to it. So with all of its feelings. So you have, for instance, an ordinary person, when he desires something or wants something, so there is a limit because the human being is limited, and therefore their emotions and their obsessions are limited. But not so with the soul, because when God sends down the soul into this world, because of the way the neshama has to affect this world, Hashem causes the soul and the animal consciousness to become so interwoven, intertwined, interlocked, and to be in a inseparable embrace for their entire time that they exist together. And there is a battle going on, but the battle is not only for superiority. It's who's going to dominate, who's going to call the shots in the body and mind. But the battle is a deeper battle. Each one wants to completely envelop, completely absorb the other one into itself, and use the talents and the abilities and the strengths of that soul towards its benefit. For example, if we're living the life we ought to be, our godly soul is in charge. Our neshama, our higher consciousness is in charge. So when our neshama is not only desires that the feelings in the heart and the knowledge and what a person is pursuing in their mind should be holy knowledge. But the neshama wants action. It wants mitzvahs. It wants mitzvah observance. And the interesting thing is that the soul, being that the soul is so elegant, the soul is such a refined spiritual entity, the soul cannot cause a reaction in the body. The soul cannot cause. If you put a neshama directly into a body, and the neshama wants to get up to do a mitzvah, for that it has to coil its toes and strengthen and move and flex its muscles and stand up, and so many different physical things need to happen in order for the mitzvah to be done. The soul can't do that because the soul and the body can't communicate. So what happens is the neshama has to transmit that to the animal consciousness. The animal consciousness, who essentially is egocentric and obsessed with self, the neshama has to transmit that to the animal soul, and the animal soul has to give the command because it is the engine of the body and get the person to go ahead and do it. So even though the animal soul is a dark consciousness, it's a consciousness of klipa, of unholiness, and that's why it wants to ignore God and just wants to be involved in its own gratification and its own enjoyment. Nevertheless, the neshama is able to take the body's strength and the body's ability, the animal soul's strengths and abilities, and direct it to the performance of a mitzvah. Dominion and causing the animal consciousness to be enslaved to the neshama, even though the animal soul really doesn't want it. So the soul is the stimulator, but the actual doer is the animal consciousness in it. And sometimes it goes even deeper than that. The neshama is able to impose its will so strongly on the animal consciousness that it's able to take the animal and educate it and make the animal begin to enjoy a mitzvah. Get the animal consciousness of man to find a thrill and an excitement in doing something holy and something godly. That's a deeper influence. It's literally capturing and conquering the mind, the feelings. But tzaddik is completely that way. Completely transforms all of his animal feelings and they become holy. But it also works vice versa. Just like the soul influences the animal soul from within, the animal soul, if the person is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, the animal soul can't control, the opposite happens. The animal consciousness of man is able to reach up and to steal and draw forth energy and fire from the neshama and use it for its negative pursuits. Which means it can take energy, a godly energy, a spiritual energy, and do it to for it to pursue its own lusts and impulses and gratification. Sometimes it can be so bad that the animal soul can manipulate the soul itself, that the neshama itself becomes like intoxicated for a while and begins to find meaning and excitement in materialism. A soul that sat in Gan Eden, that marinated in holiness for thousands of years, can come down in this world and become distorted. And the energies can be contaminated and perverted into the wrong thing. So here we understand. So that's why a non-Jew, when he's pursuing something, he's pursuing it, first of all, with one soul. Secondly, even with that one soul, it's a limited thing. The Jew has a dimension of infinity. And when he gets involved in something, it's two souls. And it's a godly soul. That's why it's an endless obsession. It's such fire, such intensity. And that's what the soul cries out to God. Not only has my fire been extinguished, not only have I lost my passion to Hashem, but my very passions and my love and my fear has been taken hostage by the klipa, by the other side. He wants to take my emotions, la'avodim, to serve him. And the Tanya says that when does the soul cry out? He says every single night when the soul goes up to heaven, because we know that the neshama gets some relief from physical, because it goes up, it goes away from the body to some degree as it rises higher. Then the neshama cries out. And he says, instead, Hashem, what has happened to me? Instead of my yearning and my crying and my thirst to bond with you, I crave cheesecake. I crave other stupidities. I long for a vacation in the Caribbean. I'm obsessed with sports or with nice cars or whatever. Well, for every new gadget and thing that comes out. Instead of laying awake and I'm not being able to fall asleep at night because I'm intimidated by your presence, as it says in Shulchan Aruch, that a person should think that God is standing above the person, looking down at you every moment. How can you fall asleep? Instead of feeling that way, which should be the normal feeling that a soul should feel, instead I lay awake and worry about the stock market. What has happened to me? This is the cry of the neshama. Vayomer aleha Elisha. And Elisha, and Hashem says to the neshama, Ma esalach, what can I do for you? After you have fallen so low, what can I do for you? Hagidili, tell me. Ma yeshlach babayis, what do you have in your home? Do you have something? Is there something left? Is there something in you that's still pure? Is there one power in you? Do you have something that is still innocent, that is still pure, that has not become perverted by the animal soul? Anything that's clean, that is still healthy. And this soul answers, V'atayimer, Ein l'shev chasech kol. Your maid doesn't have anything, babayis. There's nothing there. Everything. My pleasure is in the wrong place. My desire is in the wrong place. My intellect is in the wrong. I buried my mind in all the stupidities of this world. My emotions are completely wrecked. My thoughts, my speech, there's nothing. I have nothing left. But the only thing I do have is a course of oil. The soul realizes one thing. The only thing I have is my very identity. There is shemen. Shemen is chachma. Shemen is wisdom. Chazal tell us that if you haragel b'ner, if someone lights ner, so it means the Friday night candles, and says you should light with oil if you can. Haven't laid binon tamidah chachamim. Have children that are tamidah chachamim. Why? Because oil has to do with wisdom. Also, if someone wants to be smart, wants to attain wisdom, yadrin, they should daven towards the south, daven towards the east, but turn a little bit towards the first on this with a southern angle, so that you could go towards the menorah. And the menorah was lit with oil. Because oil is wisdom. And the neshama says, I have nothing left but a little bit of oil. What is it referring to, the oil? Chachma is the first power of the neshama. We know we have 10, above this, Esther Sphere is 10 attributes. Our Sobos has 10 attributes. When we say wisdom, we don't mean intellectual wisdom. We don't mean understanding. Because we said earlier, the understanding of the mind of the soul can also become perverted, can also become messed up, distorted. The neshama is saying, what I do have is one thing. I have my chachma, wisdom, the inner point where the soul meets God, where the neshama is attached with an unbreakable attachment to Hashem. That's where emunah is. That's where faith is. That's where the neshama senses and knows Hashem, not through any intellectual understanding. It just knows it from within itself. It knows it because Hashem is illuminating. Hashem shines into that place. Over there is a nitzutz nivra, a nitzutz, a spark of creation that touches nitzutz boire, that touches the spark of the Creator, where they're intertwined and one. Soul and God are completely one. And over there we just know. We know we're Jews, and we know we are Hashem's. And we know the truth that He is the one who created the world, and that He is the only reality, and He's the absolute reality. And all of creation is a creation of Yesh Me'ayin. We sense that, and feel that, and know that in the inner sacred place in our heart, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's our Pintaliyah, that's the Hashem, and that's the Chachma. So Hashem says, wonderful. The Shemen, you have that? Good, we have something to work with. It's a miracle that the soul is aware of that. Because we're talking about the essence of the neshama. That part of us can never get distorted. It can never get twisted. It could be concealed. A person can forget about their pintaliyid. They can forget about their... But it can never be distorted. What does that mean? See, this pintaliyid is what drives us towards Mesiras Nefesh. This pintaliyid where the yid is attached to Hashem and he knows that he will... It's... Separating from God is unquestionable. It's not because I desire. It's not based on a feeling. It's not because being connected to Hashem is pleasurable, enjoyable. Not because of any reason. It just is. The neshama is, shared before Yom Kippur, it's the yechidah shebenefesh. The soul cannot separate. That degree, that aspect of attachment, where it's not I want very badly to be connected, but I just cannot be separated. And as we said, that's why Jews gave their lives up. Not because of scholarly, not because of understanding. It was throughout the history. Women, children, saints and sinners. Didn't make a difference. Jews of all walks of life gave their lives up when it came to question. When someone told them they can't be Jewish. These very Jews who all their lives perhaps couldn't care less, or at least appeared that they couldn't care less about Yiddishkeit, about Torah and mitzvahs. But when you messed with their identity, when you told them they can't be a Jew, that's when, no, you're not going to say that. That's a pintle of yid that can't be broken. That can never be taken into the klipa, into the world, into something else. Which means it can't be distorted, that you should become attached to worldliness with that kind of obsession that you can't leave go. Could leave go. Maybe don't want to. But this inseparable bond, that's only with Elokus. That's only with Hashem. That's our chachma that remains exclusive to God. It can't go anywhere. And that's why that, no matter where a Jew has gone, no matter how much they've abused their soul, this will always remain innocent, pure, and holy. So Hashem says, very good. You have that? Vayomer l'chi, l'chi sha'ali l'ch. So in order to heal, in order to revamp, restart, reboot your soul, this is what you need to do. Go borrow kelim and achutz. Go take vessels from the outside. Meis kol shchenayach from your neighbors. Kelim reikim, empty vessels. Al tamiti. Do not diminish. What does that mean? Go do mitzvahs. A mitzvah is a vessel for godliness. A mitzvah is because a mitzvah is a keli. These are things that Hashem wants. And this is where God, where Hashem resides in. In a mitzvah, these are hosts for the divine life. Do mitzvahs. Take upon you. You feel yourself. You're crying out. You're miserable. You're looking for the warmth, for the fire. You want to get that. Listen to me. Do so. Go out, take upon yourself a new mitzvah. Not just one mitzvah. Go do a lot of mitzvahs. But the neshama says, but these, I don't feel. What's the point of doing mitzvahs when it's just so empty? I mean, it's so dull. And Hashem says, true, kelim reikim, they're empty vessels. They're empty, you don't feel any connection to them. Your emotions aren't there, your heart isn't there, your feelings aren't there, nothing is there, it's an empty vessel. More than that, it's a borrowed vessel. You don't even identify. You feel like you're doing these things because everybody in the neighborhood does that. Because that's what you and everybody does. It's not mine. I don't feel personally connected to this. Hashem says, don't worry about it. Go ahead and do mitzvahs. But do as follows. Here's the thing, not just go do mitzvahs. Take your take your pintaliyid, take your oil, your essence, and pour it into the vessels. What does that mean? Do the mitzvah with your essence. Do it from, meaning, not fire. There's no fire here. There is no passion. There's no fire. There is identity. Which means stop a moment before you do the mitzvah. And think one thing. I'm a Jew, and the dearest thing to me is my connection to God. I am so Jewish, I am so insanely Jewish, that I would be willing to give everything up, my life and everything I have. How do I know? Because that's just in my genes. That's in the spiritual DNA of being a Jew, that Jews cannot separate from God. This mitzvah is an expression of my attachment to Hashem, and therefore I do the mitzvah. I do the mitzvah not because I love it. I do the mitzvah not because it's exciting and because I see the pleasure and I feel the tingling flow of energy flowing through my soul. Not that. I'm doing it because this is who I am. Because a yid and a mitzvah, a yid and Hashem, go together. They can't be broken. That's why I'm doing it. Just heard a story, saw the story a while ago, but it left a very deep impact. During one of the wars, the Beirut War, the soldiers were out fighting. There were a couple of Hasidim who went out to the battlefield, went into Lebanon. And the thing was, they wanted to encourage the soldiers that are fighting, whatever, give them some life. So they went out to different groups and they would dance and sing with them and give them, sing Yisrael, B'tach B'Hashem, and give them a Lebedikai. And so one time it was early morning and they came across a whole line of tanks that were going out into battle. And they figured, you know what? We can do tefillin with them. Put tefillin with these people before they go to battle. Give them that mitzvah before they go. So they came over to the first tank and they put the tefillin on. The guys were willing. They roll up the sleeves and they put the tefillin. They came to the second tank. So there was the guy who was the driver, and they came over to him. And they realized after they came up and they made a horrible mistake. This guy obviously was this real, real anti-religious zealot. And he just opened up his mouth with the most vulgar curses. Screaming at them, get out of here, you die, Tim, you this, you did whatever, and I don't want to have any. So, okay, that was not what they expected, but they quickly moved away, and they were going to go to the next tank, but the fellow on the other side, his partner, called him over, and he said, tell me, Habibi, if I put on the tefillin, is God going to protect me in battle? So, this Chassid says to him, he says, Hashem is going to protect you in battle when you put on the tefillin and you don't put on the tefillin. You're Hashem's child and Hashem loves you and he's going to put the tefillin. He's going to protect you. But since Hashem loves you and is going to save you for no reason at all, just because he loves you, shouldn't you put on tefillin for no reason at all, just for Hashem's sake? So the guy put on the tefillin. And later, this other guy who's sitting over there says, calling him back. And he has his sleeves up. This guy was screaming and ranting and shouting. And they don't understand. He says, come, I want to put the tefillin. They're looking at him like crazy. And he said, to do a mitzvah to be holy, I'm not interested. To do a mitzvah to be religious, I'm not religious. I don't want to do a mitzvah to go to the world to come, I don't know if I believe, I don't believe. But just do a mitzvah. Because this is just for God's sake. That I want to be. That I want to do. That's the course of oil. That's the essence of Eden. I don't want, I don't need, I don't understand. It just is. you might not have such a good relationship with your parents. If it's their birthday, you call them. Happy birthday. Why? Because that's what a child does. You say Kaddish for a parent that has left this world. Not because you love or because you admire, because that's the way it is. This is who you are. These are your parents. You do a mitzvah because this is who you are. But when you think, see, when you take a moment and you just think that before you do the mitzvah, then the mitzvah is filled, but the mitzvah is not filled with emotion, with feeling. The mitzvah is filled with your essence. You're taking your essence and you're pouring it into the mitzvah. And that, he says, there is going to resurrect your soul. Because when you reveal your essence and put it into a keli, you draw that forth, that is going to reconnect you and open up all the feelings. They will all follow. One condition he does say to her is take your children and close the door, lock the door. What does that mean? That means if you're really thinking about getting back and getting back fired up about Yiddishkeit, do mitzvahs with your essence, knowing that you're a Yid and you want to bond and not to bond. I'm doing this because that's what a Jew does. And this is my connection to Hashem. But when you're doing the mitzvah like that, you're doing that, but you want to get your Yeladim back. You want to get your children back. You want to get the fire and the excitement and the emotions kicking. For that to have to extract it, you can't say, well, I'm going to continue getting involved and obsessed with all kinds of other shtusim and all kinds of stupidity, and then I'm going to get my soul fired up. It doesn't work that way. Take your children back and close the door. Which means look at your life and see, where am I overly involved, overly indulgent, overly obsessed in things that are not holy, in things that are not of any, doesn't have to be necessarily sin, but they're just not holy and not godly, and I don't have to put my soul into these things. So when you extract it, bring it in, and then, but still doesn't mean you'll be fired up, just pulling yourself away from other things. But then when you do mitzvahs, and you pour your essence in your mitzvahs, v'atu b'nayich tichyu b'mitzvah, you and your children will be resurrected. This is the connection to this week's parsha, just because this connection, this pintle yid that is attached to Hashem, where comes b'Yerusha, we have it from Avram Avinu. Where particularly in Avram's life did that come about? Where is that revelation where the Yid sees Hashem crystal clear? And at no cost, will never give up his connection to Hashem at any cost. Where does that come from? It comes from Vayera Elav Hashem, this week in the parasha, the first. Because Lech Lecha was mainly Avram's achievements. True, as we spoke last week, they were not regular human achievements. They were achievements that were commanded by Hashem. Hashem was the one who commanded Avram. So whatever Avram did, he did it by divine command, and therefore it had godly power to it, but it was still his avodah. It was something that he was doing. All the way up to, he perfected himself and did the ultimate command, bris milah. Vayera elav Hashem is where Hashem responds to Avram. And reveals, that's why it says, not to Yishmael, a love to him, even though they all had the bris. It was Vayera Elov Hashem. And the Dariz and Rashi says, Lavakar Esachayla, that Hashem came to heal the, to visit the sick. So the Arizal says that the word Chayla is Gematria 49. What's called Lavakar Esachayla? Avram Avinu had the 49 gates of wisdom. He had the most highest understanding that's humanly possible. But the 50th, he didn't attain. Why? Because the 50th can only come as a gift from Hashem. It's not something you can understand. But when a person only has 49, and they realize that the 50th is infinitely beyond them, they become chayla sahava. They become sick with yearning. They yearn for that. Vayeda elav Hashem. Hashem revealed himself to him to heal the sick, to give him the 50th that he didn't have. And that revelation that Hashem gave to Avram comes to us by birth. Naturally, every single Jew. We don't see it outside, but we see it in our soul. But we might argue, so we know, Vayera Elav Hashem, Parshas Vayera, Hashem is vivid in our soul. We might argue, well, that was when my neshama was in heaven, our soul sees. But down here below, when we're trapped by an animal soul, we're trapped by the worldly environment, maybe it's not there. So we get the Aftarah, and the Aftarah says, V'isha achas v'nesheya b'nei anevi'in. That the neshama is, the neshama, despite the concealments of the body, despite the covers up of the noisha, the creditors who try to conceal and cover up, the neshama has the ability to appear and to reawaken and experience its essential connection to God and express that in its life through the Torah and the mitzvahs that it does.
Dann gebet in dann gewein, dann trinn, lass ich nicht verloren gar. Ich behalte dann trinn, in dann heiße de Mues, zusammen mit de Tillets, in de Eilige in Mues. Mit Zürer, ich geruchel, verleihe zusammen. Mit den Tillis von den Mammes, wo sind gegangen in Flammen. Jede jüdische Tville, ich seh in dich her. Baman Kisa, Jakubit, baut ich jede Tille. Oh, ich gedenk, ich gedenk, dann arre bachne in dein Blut. Wo dit is, wa da kinder jeden tu. Ui, di taier is jedes mu. Wenn di lehre so da kinder schmeiß ru. Ide ne ich di di leuven. Ach, ich mich ha so in der Räume. Di gis da ram, di je mir je ne. Di ma schäfe zi gläuve. Ide ne, ide ne. Di schare ich schon mal. Machst du jung, da krechst gar nicht darauf. Heu mich husche für die Taie, wenn du suchst im Leab die Knaie. Jeden Weg in Wein, im Himmel wart mir dann viele. Bis es nur schön, sind die Kunde jetzt, weil ich brauche.